dressing.
I did.
The idea of eating ketchup on a salad is enough to make me want to vomit.
That's only because you've never had it,
I say, wagging a finger in his direction.
Don't knock something until you've tried it.
Didn't your mother teach you that? He works through the concept by biting on his bottom lip. A whiff of cologne, something peppery, with the warmth of leather, billows through the air. It dances through my body and taunts my brain. My mom taught me not to curse in public, especially the word fuck in church. That's a lesson I won't soon forget. He widens his eyes for effect.
I laugh as I head into the hallway.
I bet you were a handful to raise. I don't think I was bad, actually. I mean, I had moments, but generally, I was pretty level-headed.
He follows me as I shuffle down the corridor.
He leaps ahead and tugs the front door open before I get the chance.
Thanks, I say,
dipping my head to hide my smile and slipping outside. The chirp of crickets welcomes us as we take the few steps across the porch. We stay quiet until our shoes hit the gravel of the driveway.
Aren't you going to lock up? He asks.
No. Shock registers across his face. You can't just leave your doors unlocked like that. I know that it's Honey Creek and all, but you still gotta lock your doors.
No, I don't, I laugh. No one is going to bother the place. Besides, if they do, Liv will see.
What if she doesn't know we're not there? Our cars are there.
She will. I glance at him out of the corner of my eye. Even if she doesn't, someone will call her after they see us at Tanks and want the scoop.
He slows his pace and shoves his hands in his pockets.
The scoop, huh?
What will that consist of?
Just that the new vet in town was having dinner with me.
You and I getting married is somewhat of a scandal around here, I joke.
I mean, I was sort of the most eligible bachelorette, you know? And you slide in here and put a ring on me. I look across my shoulder.
The dimple in the center of his chin creases as he mulls over whether I'm kidding or not.
That little indentation used to be my go-to when he would tease me about my freckles. I'd tell him at least my chin didn't look like a baby's butt. But now, I kind of like it. It gives him a playfulness, and it's a warning that he's chock full of trouble.
He turns and catches me looking at him.
Were you really?
He asks.
What?
The most eligible bachelorette? My cheeks split into a wide grin.
I was kidding, Doc.
This seems to satisfy him. He worries his bottom lip back and forth as we mosey our way up the road. I hope our scandal is really good, he says finally. There's something fun in getting to be the bad boy that leads you astray.
Sorry to burst your bubble, but our scandal is more of a low-key thing. We'll probably only get one, maybe two more good days out of it, because the scandal mill is pretty busy right now.
Ooh, what are we gossiping about?
Well, I say, digging my hands into my pockets too. The mayor of the town next door got drunk, stole a police car, and parked it on the courthouse lawn last week. So I'm pretty sure everyone is still dishing about that.
His eyes light up. The town next door? Is that where we used to go to the 4th of July festival every year?
Yes. Barnstable. Same place.
Wow, I haven't thought about that for a long time. Do you remember those popsicles we used to get that looked like red, white, and blue bombs? And then we'd climb up on the hill by the bank and watch the fireworks, I say, finishing the sentence for him.
He nods, a look of satisfaction painted on his face.
I'm sure I have something similar on mine, too. I can't believe he remembers those silly popsicles and our 4th of July tradition, but there's something acutely wonderful about the fact that he does. I tell everyone I'm with on the 4th every year about the time the fire department let them off and the one came sailing right over our heads.
He says with a laugh.
No one ever believes me about that.
I was scared of fireworks for years afterward.
Logically, he says, shaking his head.
Man, We had some good times around here. Do you remember the summer when I was into baseball cards and you were into the bubble gum that came in the packets? I let my head fall back. I loved that stuff. It had the best flavor. I'd forgotten about that. And you used to go into, what was it called? Harvey's? Yes, I say with a laugh. He blamed you for throwing that baseball through his window. The old codger. That was Aaron that did that, he says, his face jerking toward mine. I saw him today. What a coincidence. Not really. This is Honey Creek, you know. He half shrugs. True. We step over a broken piece of sidewalk and around a bicycle whose rider is nowhere to be seen. I'd forgotten about Harvey's, I admit. You would give me the money and I'd go in and buy them since he wouldn't let you in. He bumps me with his shoulder, and then I'd split the gum with you. Pretty good plan, if you ask me. Hey, it was a business arrangement, I say, bumping him back. We both won in the end. Yeah, I guess. He makes a face I can't read as we reach the top of the hill. A silence fills the space. All I can think of is how we've always been good business partners. A yellow sign in the shape of a beehive welcomes passersby to Honey Creek. Holden stops and points to the small font beneath the trio of bees, smiling, that spells out the town's population. You know, I thought the rest of the world would have caught up with Honey Creek by now, he says, almost to himself. We check the rest of the world at the county line, don't you know? Just to make sure you city people aren't trying to sneak in all that modern hocus-pocus stuff. He laughs. One of the reasons I always liked visiting here was that it really was so different from Phoenix. But I was just as happy to get back home. I scoff like his statement offends me somehow. We were just as glad to get rid of you. He takes his hands out of his pockets and runs one through his hair. The look on his face is animated. I can almost see the wheels turning in his head. I just don't know what they're turning about. I get why Pap loves it so much here, but I get why Mom wanted to leave, too. It's a great place to visit, but I need... I don't know what I need, he says, his voice drifting away. We exchange a smile as we find the sidewalk that starts in front of the old deli. Slowly, we make our way into town. Holden doesn't seem to be in much of a hurry, so I just walk alongside him. We pass the gas station with two pumps, one unleaded and one diesel, and the butcher shop. Finally, the little red metal building comes into view. My grandma used to bring me here for breakfast, he says. It used to be more of a breakfast place, but we never went there until Tank took it over because my grandma thought that the woman that ran it before stole her crepe recipe, and Grandma refused to set foot near that place. He chuckles as he picks up the pace toward the restaurant. The church bells from a few streets over ring a new hour as I make it to the front of Tank's. Holden stands next to a muddy Jeep with a bumper sticker outlining what will happen to the person who mistakenly rear-ends them. He turns quickly, extending an arm to point toward something. Instead, his arm collides with my side and knocks me sideways. My foot catches on the curb and I topple toward the ground. Ah! I squeal as panic flashes through my veins. I turn to the side to try to catch the ground with my hands when I'm snatched upright and into Holden's arms. My stomach wiggles around as his grin grows warmer and more mischievous. Our breathing is ragged as we stare into each other's eyes. My heart pounds in my chest so loud that I think Holden can hear it. Holden's fingers press into my side, his cologne washing over me and drowning out the fear that just surrounded my senses. He forces a swallow. His Adam's apple bobs in his throat. My lips part as my gaze lands on his mouth. His tongue swipes along the bottom ridge and makes it appear even more kissable. Damn it! I drag in a lungful of air. He releases me from his grip, but not completely. It's as if he wants to hold on to me as much as I want him to.
"What do you say we get our food to go?"
he asks, his voice rough. I grin. "I think that's a good idea, Mr. McKenzie. Or we could say forget it and just go home." His eyes burn with a mixture of heat and amusement.
"When is the last time you've eaten?"
Breakfast? Maybe?
He releases me. "Then you're going to need some sustenance. Let's get a sandwich and eat it on the way home."
I laugh and head for the door. "I'll race you."
His laughter follows me inside.
Chapter 21. Sophie. "Here." Liv shoves a coffee from tanks into my hand. I had to get some caffeine or I wasn't going to make it through the day. We stroll down the center of Grigg's Hardware. Old man Grigg waves with one hand from the front counter as we pass by. His other hand is stuck in the front of his bib overalls. The styrofoam is warm in my hand, and I have half a notion to let it sit against my hips in the hope that it works out some of the kinks in my muscles. But I don't, because doing something like that is the first clue to your nosy older sister that something is wrong. And nothing is wrong. Actually, everything is very, very right, and that's what scares me. "What do you think?" I ask, pointing at all the paint chips in all colors of gray. "I'm thinking of redoing all the bedrooms upstairs in gray." Liv wrinkles her nose. "Then how will you keep track of them? You can't say, check on the couple in the yellow room if they're all gray." "I know that, but everything I'm reading online says that gray is the color right now." I take a sip of the coffee and eye a particular shade in something called Dove. I usually have another 5 or 10 reservations for the next month. I know the sweet tea is stealing them from me.
"Well, it's not stealing them from you. They're just stealing what could be yours."
"Not helping." She rolls her eyes. I sort through the paint samples and find a sage green one that's not on the hot colors list, but I do love it. Although, I wonder whether that's because it reminds me of someone's eyes. My weight shifts back and forth as I fan the paint card in my hand. I pretended to be asleep this morning when Holden got up. He didn't know I peeked as he came into my room after a shower and got dressed at the end of the bed. I'm sure he didn't know that I felt him watching me out of the corner of his eye, or that I held my breath while he pressed a ghost of a kiss to my forehead before he left. Goosebumps break out across my skin as I remember waking up last night in his arms. He held me tight, as if he were afraid I'd get up and go. Little did he know, I wouldn't have left if the house caught on fire. These mornings are too sweet. The evenings, ridiculously fun. The nights, too everything, for any of this to be good for me. But that's the problem. It feels too good. When I look in his eyes or feel his touch, I almost believe it's real. The rational part of my brain says to play it safe, but the rest of me points out that it doesn't feel dangerous. It feels exactly as it should. I sigh. "What's going on?" Liv asks. "Huh?" The paint sample that has been swinging back and forth stops in my palm as my gaze connects with my sister's. "Oh my gosh." She almost squeals. "I get it." Or, "You got it, rather, but I get it." It's my turn to roll my eyes. "Can you not make a spectacle, please?" "Oh, who cares? It's just old man Grigg. What's he care? Everyone in this town gossips, Liv. Even the man born before our grandparents." She pops her hip to the side. "You slept with your husband. That's not weird. You just made it weird." She fights the grin that spreads across her face and fails. "Was it good?" "Olivia! Okay, no more, I promise." "But one of these days." I shove the green card back in its slot and choose three separate gray samples. They all look the same to me, really. One might be bluer, but that's only because I saw on the website that some grays have more blue tints in them. Do you like Earl or Dove? I ask. Neither. You're so much help. She shrugs and sips her coffee. I leave her standing there and walk a few aisles over. I have no clue what I'm doing, but I pick up a roller, a tray, and some painter's tape. If nothing else, it'll be a good distraction. I chuck a paintbrush into the tray. Okay, Liv says, walking up beside me. What's bothering you?
Nothing.
She blows out a breath.
Let's try this another way. What is Holden doing today?
He's working. I twist my lips around, willing myself to just be quiet. I don't need to talk about this. Talking will only make it worse. Except when I look at Liv and sees she cares, it prickles something in my heart. And I need to tell her, if only so she'll be on my side. Because even though there aren't sides in this, and there won't be, I need someone to reassure me that it'll all be fine. And, I say, looking back at the paint supplies, meeting with Montgomery today or tomorrow. Who is that? Wait, he's a guy from Florida or wherever, isn't he? I nod. Her eyes grow wide.
Is he still going?
This is the question that I've been avoiding. Hearing it asked out loud feels like someone stabbed me in the heart with a pickaxe. Yes, I say softly. If hearing the question out loud hurt, hearing my answer spoken into the universe is torture. A pain that I've been trying so hard to keep contained breaks free inside my soul. My chest splits in half as I take in my sister's pity. A pity I don't want.
Oh, Sophie, I get it now.
She nearly whispers.
I'm sorry.
It's fine, I say, reassuring her. And maybe myself. Honest, it's not fine. Nothing has changed, I say, my voice dead. I mean, so sleeping with him changed nothing for you? I give her the best blank stare I can muster. Does it always mean something to you when you have sex with a guy? No, but I don't marry my childhood bestie first and then have sex with him. I just pick random guys up at the bar and rockery. I sigh, turning my back on her as I move toward the plastic drop cloths. It's not the same, Sophie.
Maybe not.
But it is the same situation as it was before. I mean, the whole objective of this little caper was so he can get the job in Florida. That's still the objective. I force a swallow and ignore how hot my skin feels. I tell myself to breathe, that everything will fall into place soon, and that I will realize it's for the best. But as I stand in front of Grig's sale rack and stare at opened packages of drop cloths, it doesn't quite feel that way. Maybe he won't get the job, Liv says.
Is it wrong to hope that?
Yes.
Well, I can't root him on when I know it will hurt you.
I tear my eyes away from the shelves and look at my sister. It won't hurt me. It might sting a little because I might miss him a little. He's fun.
I bet he is.
Her grin snaps me out of my funk. The pity I felt from her already today is the first of what will come when he leaves. I don't want her or anyone to look at me like I lost another husband. Because to everyone else, he is my husband. It's the real deal. But Liv knows how I feel. I can see it on her face. And having her feel sorry for me will be embarrassing too. I have to stay level-headed about this. I need to take things one step at a time. At one point, I had this all figured out. I just wish I could get back there. I need you to listen to me. I set my pile of things down on the floor before giving Liv my attention again. Taking a deep breath, I try to find the right words to explain how I feel. It would be really easy for me to just go all in with hope and rainbows here. Holden is fun and fun. He's smart and funny and sweet. But he's not mine, Liv.
Why not?
Because that's the truth. It's what I always do. I hear what I want to hear. I see what I want to see. I feel what I think I feel. And before I know it, I'm all screwed up. I brush a stray hair out of my face. I can't see and hear in my head he's going to stay. And now that we're talking about it, it sounds so rational. I have to accept it, Liv. Somehow. Olivia takes a sip of her coffee and silently pleads with me to see things her way. I can feel her brainwaves trying to permeate mine, but I hold tight. Eventually, she gives up. Her shoulders drop.
Fine. I hate it when you're all logical.
You know what?
What?
I smile sadly at her. At least now I have some idea of what a relationship can be like. I know what I want now. I'll just have to find it with a guy that wants it with me. Liv returns my smile. We stand face to face for a long time. Neither of us saying a word. There's really nothing to say. I've basically admitted I have real feelings for Holden, and he doesn't for me. Surely, that's the first baby step in getting through this minefield. She reaches out and taps the Earl sample.
What?
I ask. Go with that one. It's the less depressing of the two. More pink than blue undertones. I grin to myself as I put the Earl card in my paint tray. Decision made. Now, do we have a ladder tall enough to reach the top of the walls? She looks at her watch.
I don't know, but I need to get back to work. My lunch hour is almost over.
Already?
Yeah.
She presses a kiss to my cheek. Call me if you need me, okay? I'll be fine.
That's not what I asked.
I smile at her. I will. I'll call if I need you. She tosses me a wink before heading out the door. The room is quiet. The longer I stand alone, the more alone I feel. I fish my phone out of my pocket and dial my brother. It rings four times before he picks up.
Hey, he says.
I was starting to think you were avoiding me.
Nope. I only avoid girls I've slept with who want to marry me.
So no one, then?
He laughs. What do you want, you little pest?
Well, two things. First, I made a meatloaf if you want some. It's in the fridge.
Damn right I do.
And second, do we have a ladder tall enough to reach the top of the walls and ceilings? He pauses before answering.
Why didn't you call your husband about it?
My jaw sets in frustration. You're right. What am I doing calling my brother? I'll start excluding you from things now.
My bad.
A low groan rolls through the line.
I didn't say that.
I balance the phone on my shoulder and put my things back in the tray. Takes a bit of Tetris skills, but I manage.
It's in the shed in the back, he says.
Thank you. I make my way to the front of the store. Want to come by tonight and grab the meatloaf?
I'm actually heading to Liv's tonight to change her oil. I'll swing by after that.
Deal.
I have a prospective buyer pulling up right now, so I gotta run. Wish me luck.
Good luck, Joby, I say, using his nickname from childhood.
Love you.
Love you too. Bye. I get to the counter. My phone goes back into my pocket, and I ask Mr. Gregg to whip me up a sample of Earl. He disappears into the back, leaving me alone in the store. I mosey around, checking out the shovels and hoes. My fingers dust along the green tines of a rake, and I wonder offhandedly when the leaves will change this year. It's my favorite part of the season. I like it much better than when they start to fall from their limbs and leave a mess all over my deck. Maybe Holden will be here to help out this year. My fingers stop on the edge of the handle. I shake my head, my body squeezing in preparation for the moment when he leaves. I don't know when that time will come. Even if he gets the job, as I'm sure he will, it might be a month or two. I take a deep, calming breath. Easy, Sophia. You'll figure this out. I hope.
Chapter 22. Holden. You definitely have a problem on your hands, I say. Patrick takes fidget from me. Relief is evident on his face as his prized pet squirms until she's up and under his chin. I don't know what to do with her, Patrick says. She just sniffs out all of my candy now. It's like she's addicted. Sugar is addicting. I smile to myself. Just like everything else today, the word sugar reminds me of my wife. And boy, is she ever addictive. The more I'm around her, the more I want her time. Every touch leads to an itch of my fingers that I can barely stand. Each laugh or joke, every poke and prod creates a need for another go-round. It's a problem. I know it. It's a situation I didn't expect, one I don't think I could have expected if I'd tried. Sure, she's always been pretty. No doubt she's sexy. But I've encountered pretty, sexy women before and not felt like this. Pinpointing the exact cause of my predicament is tough, impossible, even. No matter how long I stay awake after she falls asleep against me, I can't decipher it. Am I just nervous and appreciating having someone to wait this out with me? Is it just a case of proximity making me want her? It could also be that we make a really good team, and that lends itself to other crazy thoughts that are more smokescreens than reality. Because Sophie and I don't really want an actual marriage. We can't. Our lives and goals are different. So different, in fact, that we had to get married to achieve them. There's no way to get around that. Anyway, I say, as Fidget tries to climb back up my arm. Just try to keep your goodies where she can't get to them. I know she likes all that stuff, but candy and chips aren't any better for her than they are for you. Got it. Thanks, Dr. Holden. Anytime, Patrick. Anytime. Go see Dottie before you leave, okay? I open the door, and he exits the room. I, on the other hand, pull out my phone. No missed calls or texts from Montgomery Farms. I consider calling his office and seeing what his status is, but I don't want to appear desperate. And I'm not desperate. Not really. I'm not even sure what the hell I am anymore. The thought of getting the job in Orlando comes with mixed emotions. There's an elation I can feel at the idea of hearing the words, "You're hired." But right on the heels of that feeling comes something else. It's painful and depressing, and the thought of working that out makes me not want to even think about it. If I could pause time forever and just stay here, thinking that I might get the job, I'd do it. Just to have both worlds in some way. My phone buzzes in my hand, and I answer it without looking. Hello? I ask. Well, hello, Holden. I finally caught you. My dad's voice sends an immediate dose of tension through my spine. I work my neck back and forth and will myself to stay calm. Breathe. Hey, Dad. What's going on? Oh, nothing, he says in a way that lets me know that he's lying. Something is definitely going on. I'm probably not going to like whatever it is. Heard anything from that job you were waiting on? I have a meeting about it today, actually, so I'll hear soon. That's good. I'll be interested to find out what happens. Me too. He doesn't say anything right away. I don't either. I wait on him to direct the conversation, because there's clearly a place he wants to go, and I'd rather just go there and be done with it. I golfed with Bob Grundle yesterday, Dad says. He said he thinks he can find you a job at one of his offices. I hold my temple with my free hand. He means well. In his own way, he's trying to help, and I have to remember that. I appreciate it, but I really don't need it, I say. Why the hell not? You don't even know if you got that job in Florida yet. It takes everything I have not to raise my voice. The tone of his words triggers my reaction, and I can just imagine the look of disdain in his eyes like I'm some errant child who won't listen to reason. If I don't get it, I'll find something else. I don't need charity from one of your friends. You better be appreciative that my friends like me so much that they would extend a hand to my son, he says, stroking his own ego. You better get your ass out of that little podunk town and away from those small-minded people and get back here before they poison your brain. My jaw hits the floor. Anger courses through me, and I have a hard time controlling it. I'm not going to sit here and listen to you talk about this town and these people like that, I spit. Oh, please. The vein in my temple pulses with each beat of my heart. The people here have shown me more kindness than you ever have. He sighs. They've gotten to you, haven't they? Just tell me you aren't staying there. Please, for the love of God, tell me you aren't staying there. Don't throw away the education I paid for to play tiddlywinks with your granddad. The muscle in the back of my neck throbs. As my shoulders sag, reality sets in. And I know one thing. I won't change his mind. It's useless to try. I drop my hand to the side. I don't want to do this with you. Well, I don't want to have to pick you up by the bootstraps either, boy. But you just keep getting yourself into a pickle. When, I ask, my jaw ticking. When have you ever had to clean up a mess I made? Name one time. Right now, if you don't get your shit straight. Right now? Right now, I'm on the precipice of the biggest thing in my life. I'll be working for the most prestigious animal hospital in the world. I'll have risen to the top before I'm 30. Did you do that in your field? I pause to let my words sink in. I've never spoken to him like this. Never come back at him with a tenth of the ferocity that I feel. The answer is no, I tell him. You didn't. But I will have. So you can take your advice and your... Don't disappoint me, Holden. The laugh that comes out of my mouth is not from amusement. It's from a place buried so deep inside me that I can feel the reverberation in my toes. He said these very words to me over and over again throughout my life, and every time I tuck my chin and try to do better. I try to make him proud. This time, though, what I'm going to do, come hell or high water, is make me proud. And he will get no glory in it. I have to go, Dad. Take care. I end the call. Patrick walks by the exam room and waves. I nod as I stand by the sink and try to even out my breathing. The door chimes as Patrick leaves. I take a long, deep breath and turn around and come face to face with Dr. Montgomery. It has to be him. I've seen his face on the company website, on interviews, even on the news. He's shorter than I expected, but with a face that matches his voice. He's clean-shaven with intelligent eyes and a polite yet slightly reserved professional smile. Hello, Dr. Montgomery, I say. It's so nice to meet you. Holden, I'm sorry I'm so late, he says. I had an emergency at the office this morning and had to take a later flight. I extend a hand. I'm just honored you'd come all this way to talk to me face to face. It's usually the other way around for a job interview. He gives my hand a firm, steady shake. I like to see potential team members in their element. It makes so much more sense to me. He drops my hand. I would have been here earlier, but I got caught behind a tractor. What color? Actually, I say, shaking my head. Say no more. Those tractors and I have had a few run-ins ourselves. He grins. I'm glad you're still here. I was afraid you'd be closed before I arrived. We are actually done for the day, but I'm happy to stick around. A hand waves through the air as he sighs. To be perfectly honest, I'm tired. Traveling exhausts me these days. I'm happy to go through everything tomorrow, if that works for you. Yes, of course. I walk through the doorway and he follows. Dottie is nowhere to be seen. She mentioned earlier that she'd be gone right at 5 tonight for some bingo fundraiser at a church. Pap is at Birdie's. That leaves just Mr. Montgomery and me. A sense of trepidation wiggles through me. It feels unnatural to be standing in my grandfather's clinic, talking to another vet about leaving after Pap offered me a permanent place. I shake the chill away and refocus. May I ask where you're staying? I gather my keys and bag from behind the counter. At a place over in Rockery, I believe. I need to check my secretary's email. Well, my wife and I run a bed and breakfast here, and we'd love to have you stay with us tonight. It'll save you a 20-minute trip to Rockery. Oh, you got married? I did. That's wonderful. Congratulations. His eyes light up. If you have a vacancy, I'd be thrilled. Thank you. Of course. Just follow me through town. It's not far. I'm parked out front, he says. Great. Let me lock up. I'm driving a little silver car. Watch for me to pull up the alleyway and then get behind me. He nods and leaves me to lock up. So far, so good, I think, as I tug my phone from my pocket. I find Sophie's name. Me. Dr. Montgomery is here. He's going to stay with us. Are you okay with that? I look at the words on the screen. An uncertainty fills my body as I realize what this means. It's do or die time. And I don't know if I do want the job or if it'll cause a part of me to die. The chat bubble blinks immediately. Her message pops up in seconds. Sophie, I have the yellow room and dinner ready. Me, see you soon. Something smells incredible, Dr. Montgomery says, setting his overnight bag by the door. He stands next to me in the foyer. Sophie's office is to our right, and to our left is a formal dining room. Three places have been set, complete with linen napkins. Two taper candles glimmer on the mantel. The reflection of light in the large mirror hanging just above the wicks creates a warm, cozy setting. Down the center of the burlwood antique table is a blue runner. Sitting on top of the fabric are white dishes filled with food. I'm floored. Utterly speechless. When Sophie texted me that she had dinner ready, I didn't expect this. Sophie comes down the hallway. Well, hello. You must be Dr. Montgomery. He nods appreciatively at my wife. So do I. She's wearing a pale pink dress that cinches at her waist. Her hair is down in a style that makes me think she got out of bed like that. Except I know better. A pink stain tints her lips, and her cheeks are flushed. She's fucking gorgeous. Like wife mode gorgeous. This woman chose me, and I'm wholly undeserving kind of gorgeous. I'm not expecting it, nor do I deserve it. Hell, it's not even technically true, but that doesn't stop me from puffing up like some asshole with a trophy wife. Because, damn. I hold a hand toward her. She takes it as she reaches us with a wide smile. I slip my arm around the small of her back and try to will myself to behave. You must be Mrs. McKenzie, Dr. Montgomery says. I'm Timothy. Well, Timothy, I'm Sophie, and I'm so happy you're joining us tonight. I've made roasted chicken. I hope you're hungry, she says sweetly. I love roasted chicken. As a matter of fact, my wife made that the night I proposed to her, he says as he follows her into the dining room. I always tell her that it was the final nail in her coffin. I couldn't possibly not marry a woman that could make a chicken like that. Sophie laughs. I'm not sure that Holden married me for my cooking skills, but I must have done something right. He must have, Dr. Montgomery says, offering his elbow to my wife. Hosting such a nice gathering is an art lost to most. I stand in the doorway and watch Sophie charm Dr. Montgomery, or Timothy, to her. I hope my jaw isn't on the hardwood floor, but I'm not sure. How did this woman who fought me over a payday a couple of days ago turn into this? I must have missed something, because when I look up, Dr. Montgomery is seated with a glass of wine. He looks more relaxed and at home in this space than I probably do, and I don't quite know what to make of that. Would you like a glass of wine, love? Sophie looks at me and tries to tame her smile. Her pet name throws me off, and she clearly delights in it. Her quiet, contained giggle is at my expense, but music to my ears. I would love one, I say. She pulls out a chair across from Dr. Montgomery and hands me a glass of wine. This is a lovely place you have here, Dr. Montgomery says. There's so much charm. You can feel the history. I bet that if walls could talk, this place would have stories for years. My grandmother inherited the honey house from her grandmother, Sophie says, sitting to my right. My great-grandfather kept honeybees. He had a locally famous beekeeping farm way back when. I walk around to the chair she's standing in front of and pull it out for her. She seems surprised, but covers her shock quickly. Thank you, she says. I sit at the remaining chair with a plate. This looks amazing, Sophie. Thank you. It's nothing, really. Just some roasted chicken and vegetables. I threw in some biscuits and a salad to round it out. She flashes me a nervous smile. Now let's eat before it gets cold. We begin to fill our plates with the aromatic contents of the dishes in front of us. It's a comfortable silence, interrupted only by the occasional ding from silverware hitting porcelain. The wind blows outside, and the honey house creaks with it. It all works together to create a storybook-like environment that I think my potential employer might appreciate. So, Sophie, tell me about your husband, Dr. Montgomery says, spearing a piece of chicken. What's he like? Sophie sets her fork down beside her plate. Her gaze falls to mine. Her lashes flutter as she eyes me with mischief. I can't help but grin. She could roast me right now, carry on a spiel of things that are unflattering at best, but she won't. She might have a bit of fun with this, but I trust her. The realization that I do, on this level, in real time, is a wonderful thing. Well, she says, I don't know where to start. Start with the good stuff, I whisper loud enough for Dr. Montgomery to hear. He laughs. What made you decide to choose him? He busies himself by smoothing a square of butter on a biscuit. I often find that's the best way to get to know the truth about a person. Finding out why the ones closest to them chose to be with them. My stomach rumbles as I manage my breaths. I hope Sophie has something good and false to reply. She sits tall, shoulders back, and looks right at Dr. Montgomery. When he asked me to marry him, I thought he was joking, she says. It was so out of the blue and spontaneous that I contemplated that he'd lost his mind. Oh, no, Dr. Montgomery says, lifting a brow. Damn right, oh, no. But the more I thought about it, she says, the more I realized that it was such a logical progression in our relationship. We've known each other for years. We got married once under a maple tree after a wiffle ball game when we were 10 or 11. So doing it again at this age didn't seem all that crazy. Dr. Montgomery chuckles, but my heart squeezes at her words. She's right. My proposal was a natural move because it solved a problem for each of us, but it was not because we were in love. And I'm sure that's what the doctor thinks. I watch Sophie's profile and the way her little nose turns up at the end. The way the apples of her cheeks sit high, perched on the ends of her cheekbones. Her lips form the sweetest rose and beg for a kiss. From someone who loves her. Someone who would do for her so much better than me. Her head turns and she faces me. Her eyes search mine with a concern and kindness that hits me in my already sensitive heart. I could tell you that he worries obsessively about me locking the door, or that he goes out of his way to take care of the little things that mean a lot to me, she says, spinning her wedding ring around her finger. He refuses to put me in a situation until he's 100% sure I want to be there. And if he gets any inclination I'm uncomfortable or worried, he stops what he's doing and asks me to talk about it. He gets creative when I have a problem to solve with my business. We exchange a smile so soft that it takes everything in me not to reach out and pull her into my chest. But the thing I love most about him, Dr. Montgomery, is that he's a good man. He's genuine. Holden is a man you can respect, and that's really, truly hard to find. I know. I've looked. She blinks rapidly as the color in her eyes blurs. Looking down at her plate, she dabs at her eyes as discreetly as possible. I reach out and take her hand in mine and give it a gentle squeeze. My heart swells in my chest. I want to tell her all the things I admire about her, all the reasons why she's a great friend and a great wife. But I don't, because her words swim together with Pap's. Words like respect and love and marriage, all colliding together and making me confused and tongue-tied. Sophie talks about me like my gran would have talked about Pap. Like she really does care for me. I guess on some level she probably does. We're friends, after all. But if she did want me to stay here with her, why would she speak so glowingly about me? It's counterintuitive. I can't rationalize it. Before I can sort it out, Dr. Montgomery speaks again. That's quite a referral, he says, and from the heart. You would be crazy not to hire my husband, Timothy. He's the best man I've ever known. She looks at me and smiles. This job is all he's ever wanted. And seeing him get the things he wants most is what I want, too. Dr. Montgomery sits back and places his napkin on the table. His plate is clean, polished of the food Sophie thoughtfully prepared. I appreciate your thoughts, Sophie. and I hope your husband does as well. I'm sure it won't be easy for you to leave this place behind and come to Orlando if he's selected for the job. Many spouses put up roadblocks. I've seen it many times over the years. Sophie looks at me. She raises her chin. Holden's dreams hinge on this one opportunity. I'm just a piece of a much larger puzzle. This marriage isn't only about what I want. It's about what he needs to be happy too. The hair on the back of my neck stands as my chest squeezes. Of course she's right. She is a piece of a much larger puzzle. But as I sit and look into her eyes, I wonder how big this puzzle might actually be. Her words roll around in my head. I want to believe there was a veiled meaning in what she said, but I'm not sure I have the right to hope for that. Very well. Dr. Montgomery pushes away from the table and gets to his feet. I'm a fast eater. It's a product of growing up in a house without much food. It was delicious, Mrs. McKenzie. Thank you for sharing your talents with me tonight.
Oh, of course, Sophie says. Thank you for making the trip up here for Holden.
He gives me a tilt of his head. I'm going to retire for the evening. It's been a very long day, and a good night's rest will do me a lot of good, I'm afraid. Can you tell me where my room might be?
I'll show you, I say.
He waves me off before I can even get to my feet. Nonsense. Enjoy your dinner. Just point me in the right direction.
It's up the stairs, the first door on your right, Sophie says. I'm happy to show you.
That's quite all right, he says. Towels are in the bedroom.
Yes, sir, she says.
He nods in approval before turning to me. I'll see you in the morning, around 8. Sounds great, I say. Good night, Sophie, Dr. Montgomery says.
Good night, Timothy.
With a nod of his head, he exits the room. The stairs squeal as he takes them slowly. Before long, we hear the bedroom door shut. I look at Sophie, unsure as to what I should say. There are so many things on the tip of my tongue, but they all feel wrong. She scoots her chair back.
I need to go to the ladies' room.
Wait, I say. She pauses, her eyes darting to mine. I think she's holding her breath as well. I force a swallow. How did you do all this?
I made it for you.
Her shoulders fall.
You said you wanted chicken last night,
she adds as she bows her head and gets up from the table. I start to speak, to ask her what I really wanted to say, but I don't because she might be afraid of that. There's a chance that she'll be scared that I'm going to ask her what she meant earlier. There's a greater chance that she doesn't want to explain. An explanation could be something she can't give me, because she may be as confused as I am about what's happening between us. If she's feeling anything like I'm feeling right now, she'll need a second to herself. She disappears around the corner, her pace quicker than necessary. I don't go to her. Instead, I take a bite of the chicken and wonder what in the hell just happened. Things with Dr. Montgomery went well, very well, actually. He seemed to like me and Sophie. He looked comfortable and a bit impressed by dinner and our interaction. So why is there this pit in my stomach? Why do I feel like something is terribly fucking wrong?
Chapter 23. Sophie. I open the bedroom door to find Holden already in bed. He's awake, his forehead wrinkled as he looks at something on his phone. He glances up, takes me in, and gives me a small smile before going back to whatever had his attention before I walked into the room. Making my way to the empty side of the bed,
I pore over what I should say to break the ice. And why there's ice to break in the first place. My plan was to give him time to fall asleep before I came to bed. I insisted on cleaning up dinner myself. He was typical Holden, and insisted just as adamantly that he help. We moved around the kitchen quietly. It was a comfortable silence, albeit ripe with a conversation of unsaid things. What things, though? I'm not sure. I fulfilled my part of the agreement tonight. I made Holden look like the perfect candidate he is. So why it feels like he wants to say something to me about it, I'm not sure. I'm also not sure I even want to know. As I take off my robe and hang it on the bedpost, I can feel him watching me. And I wish for the first time that things between us could be different. How? I don't know. There's so much I don't know. But I do regret that I like him so much. That talking to him is so easy, and working with him on things from crazy marriage plans to seducing a CEO is so much fun. Because he's going to leave. I can feel it. And that's that. The mattress sinks with my weight. How do you feel like tonight went? I ask. He rustles beside me. The sound of him setting his phone on the nightstand pops through the air. I think Dr. Montgomery likes you, I say as I get settled beside him, being careful not to bump or touch him in any way.
Oh, I think Dr. Montgomery is smitten with you. If he were 30 years younger, he'd give me a run for my money.
He looks at me across his white cotton t-shirt. Our eyes meet somewhere in the uncertainty between us as we realize the words he spoke. Holden's eyes divert to the blankets.
Well, you know what I mean.
I do. You mean theoretically. He rolls over onto his side to face me. I tug the blankets up to my waist and tap them snugly around me. Maybe it's because I'm nervous, and when I get nervous, I get cold. Or maybe it's to put a barrier between his body and mine, I don't know. But I tuck those suckers around me tight.
You really like it here, huh?
He asks. Where?
In Honey Creek.
My throat feels dry. Yeah, this is home for me. My brother and sister are here. All of my memories. Why? He shrugs, as if it were some random question that just popped into his mind, but the way his forehead creases makes me think that's not true.
No reason, he says. I've just been thinking.
He wiggles around in the blankets, sticking a leg out and then pulling it back in. He shoves an arm under his pillow and then uses it to prop his head up. It's like watching an overgrown child not want to go down for a nap. And I can't help but giggle.
What?
He asks. Nothing. You're just moving around like you have ants in your pants. His grin is subtle.
I assure you that ants are not what's in these pants.
I look away, embarrassed at walking right into that one.
So back to my thinking, he says. If I get the job with Montgomery, we don't have to get divorced. Right away, you know.
I press my lips together as a physical block to keep from speaking. I'm not fully confident that my language will match the instructions sent from my brain. The command center in my head is shouting at me to proceed with caution. My mouth is ready to spill some kind of crap that will indicate that I kind of like being married to him so far, and that maybe we can try out one of those newfangled marriages where the couples live apart. People do it all the time. Lucky for me, I'm aware that my mouth is a traitor to my best interests. He searches my eyes.
I'm just saying that there's no rush.
My throat burns with a tightness that comes just before tears. I force a swallow and plead with myself not to go there. I part my lips and test my restraint.
So many things, questions, and possibilities are coursing through my brain, and I'm not sure which will shoot into the air if I open the gates. But I can't sit here and not say anything at all. "What will you do if you don't get the job, Holden?" I ask. My fingers dig into the blankets, curling the soft fabric in my hands. I can feel the material scrape beneath my fingernails. I try to keep my face free of any of the emotions that well up inside me. But hope is building in my heart. The painful experience of its swelling has me holding my breath. I hope outright, without telling myself not to. I allow my heart to wish that he will choose me. This. Us. But for the first time in my life, someone will think I'm worth fighting for. It's risky and potentially devastating, but it's where I am. I'm hopeful. I've been quietly hopeful all along. I guess I'm more like Liv than I thought. "I don't know," he says carefully. "I'll have some decisions to make then, I guess."
"I guess so."
"There's something else I didn't tell you." The fabric clenches harder in my hands.
"Oh, yeah? What's that?"
I slip my gaze up his torso and to his face. His eyes are mossy, like a storm is rolling in, and a smile plays on his lips. My heart thumps in my chest because I don't know where this is going, and by every indication, it's going somewhere interesting. Pap offered me the clinic. His voice is quiet, soft, but edged with what I think is a tempered excitement. I unclench my fists. My shoulders twist so I can face him more head-on.
"He did?" I ask.
The surprise in my voice somehow tugs at the corners of his lips. They rise higher and higher until he's in a full-blown smile.
"Would you consider that?"
I ask, aware of how excited I sound. It completely defeats my efforts to not show him exactly how I feel, but I can't hide it. I don't want him making a decision because of me and then resenting me for it. I want him to want to stay on his own. My palms begin to sweat against the blankets, and my legs are suddenly too hot, all tucked into the sheets. I free my legs from their confines and scoot one foot to the edge of the mattress. I watch his handsome face for any